This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hi, this is John. We've got a little something different for you this week. While we were at PDC, we put together a little podcasters roundtable. We met up with the guys from Deep Fried Bytes, as well as Jeff Atwood from Stack Overflow and Coding Horror fame. We had a little roundtable discussion of what we heard going on at PDC, and part one of that podcast is over on Deep Fried Bytes podcast. You can find them at deepfriedbytes.com, and it's episode 18. If you're a Deep Fried Bytes listener and this is your first time over at Herding Code, well, we're happy to have you and hope you'll come back. So here we go with the second half of Deep Fried Herding Coding Horror Extravaganza.
But I think the bottom line for these events is you get out of them what you put into them, right?
Exactly.
And I think you got to approach it as primarily a networking event. But there's so much value in the face-to-face connection with people that you know online. I mean, it's huge. So
yeah.
Don't underestimate the power of that. And it is worth some money.
Yeah. No. I think $2,500 is a small price to pay to meet all the people that you can out here. And, I mean, so you get a lot of information. You get the hard drive that they gave out, which is nice and stuff like that. But you know what? Within a week, you could get that stuff anywhere. But it is nice that Microsoft kind of brings a lot of their big hitters into the space to let them interact. And they're just normal people who are just as excited as
right.
we are
and,
about everything.
This is kind of a special case, but just an example that we had a little roundtable with Ray Ozzie that I was in. So, yeah, they do bring out, I mean, you really get to interact with some of these people. I mean, it is pretty incredible. So,
well, didn't you Twitter something about that?
Well, yeah.
Hey, didn't you Twitter something about that? That he gave you a really nice compliment or something?
I did. So, it was a small meeting room with like six or seven influencers, I guess you'd say. I don't know how I get in there. And we all introduced ourselves. And as we were around the table, I introduced myself as Jeff Atwood from Coding Horror. And I talked about Stack Overflow with Joel Spolsky that we're doing. And Ray interjects and becomes very animated. He's like, oh, yeah, Stack Overflow is really great. He's like, you know, we should be building more sites like that at Microsoft. And he's like, you should have seen the email I sent out internally about your site a week ago. And, yeah, so it was this really humbling,
cool.
unprompted yeah. compliment.
Congrats.
From the top. I was like, wow, I wasn't expecting that at all.
Kudos. That's nice.
And then to make it extra creepy, the guy sitting next to me then fires up his laptop, logs into Stack Overflow, and has an account with like 3,500 rep. And he's like checking his answers. And it was very surreal. It was all very surreal. But it's stuff like that happens to you when you come to these conferences. And just in the hallway, not like some, you know, cabal meeting with Ray Ozzie, but you'll just see the really famous people in the hallways, and you can interact with them and talk to them. And
yeah.
They're very open to that kind of stuff.
So yep. I got a question for all you guys here. Going back to the price, so it's $2,500, and it's like 5 days. 3 days, 4 days?
Four.
It's 4 days.
Four
official
well,
days.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever, weekend, Sunday. So do you think it might be better to do day passes? So say that, you know, you're not really interested in all this other stuff, Silverlight, but you really want to catch John Lamb's talk, and you want to be able to get to the open space or some sort of chalk talk that's on this.
I do. I think – I wish they would do it like they do at TechEd, where you can actually get just a day pass thing where you can pay – I don't know, like, you know, it's a very small fee. Now, you can't go to sessions. You can't go to – you don't get any – you know, you can't go to any parties. You can't do anything like that.
Well, one thing, too, I think that would be great. I think also, like, with price being a – with price as a factor, mix is a great kind of, like, step down a little bit. It's a little less expensive, and I really like the vibe kind of at mix. It seems – you know, it's a little smaller, and everyone's staying in the – or it's in a hotel, which is cool. So you have that kind of more, like – there's less, like – separation of
you can
know,
really just walk in the door on Monday and walk out on Friday or,
right.
or whatever, never even go outside,
right?
You
so
know, you sleep, you learn, you whatever there.
Yep. And I think that conference has been really cool. Like I was thinking back on that to Mix 06, and Jeff, you and I were there, and I remember sitting with you know, sitting next to Scott Guthrie and Miguel de Acasa, and, you know, like getting a demo on, you know, what they were doing, and he's cranking out code.
That was just at a restaurant. That was just an
yeah.
ad hoc hallway kind of thing. That wasn't like a session. That's
yeah.
that's the point, yeah.
And that, you know, since then, that was Miguel's like, oh, I'm going to build, you know, Moonlight, and that's, you know, influence what I'm doing with my career. And, you know, it's just, it's really cool the things that just kind of pop up like that.
Absolutely.
What about the functional programming vibe here? Have you guys noticed that? There's a lot of functional stuff. We actually learned, somebody told us, I can't remember, but the most launched lab at PDC has been the F-sharp labs. And it's not by like a little, it's by a lot, you know. So that beats Oslo, Dublin, all of that kind of stuff. What do you guys think about Oslo, by the way? Have you seen much of it?
I've seen a little bit of it, yeah. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Seems like a sort of a grand vision and that we're only seeing the first little baby steps of. So it's too soon, I think, to draw any big conclusions.
Did you get the M book, the actual modeling language book?
They were given out this modeling language, and it didn't even have M on it. It just said Oslo Modeling Language Guideline. And they were giving them out the other day. And I mean, I was like leafing through it, and I'm like, I don't get it. So I'm going to have to.
I think that's going to be a lot of people's reactions, actually.
But just the language, because I don't see the. It does have M on it, so I retract my statement. So, but yeah, I think Oslo. But you know the thing about I was talking to one of the DEs, one of the developer evangelists, and I'm like, she's like, so have you started playing around with some stuff? What do you get? And I went, you know what? It's going to take me like 3-4 weeks to really dig into stuff because, just like Jeff said, I've been focusing on the social aspects that I'm here at PDC, and I really haven't been digging in and doing a lot of the technical stuff because we can go home and do all that. I mean, we can watch all the recorded sessions. We can dig into white papers. We can do all the labs are going to be able to be downloaded. So,
well, to be more specific, I mean, I do dig into some technical stuff, but only stuff that I think is going to solve some very near-term problem for me. I mean, the larger theoretical stuff is just tough to wrap your head around, right? First, it's a big investment, and second, it's like, well, what problem does it solve? Like, what problems do I have today? Like, for me, it's like, okay, all about, I got to run Stack Overflow, which is ASP.NET, MVC. Those are the things I want to know about now. And then everything else just kind of gets pushed to that. That's nice, but, you know, so I think you got to prioritize, obviously, and for everybody, it's different.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I've looked at it, too. I've gone into these sessions, and they say something, or the keynote, and they talk about something, and I say, okay, so where can I download this from? What's the URI for the API? You know, where can I do this now? And if they say no, then I say, well, this is just an announcement. I'm only interested in launches. All I want something that I can work with now or, you know, when I get home. I don't care about what you may do in the future, you know, right now.
That's always been kind of the thing with the PDC, though. It's always been their... the coming out party for future technologies, not so much what you can play with now.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you kind of know that going in. I mean, there's tech ed is about now. You know, it's what's here, and you'll get a little bit of new stuff. Jeff is picking up the Oslo book that I just got out of the
bag. You know more about Oslo than most people now, right? You've read like 3 pages there?
Yeah.
Well, so I think next year I'm going to start a PDC swag Twitter account. Because, like, everyone's getting all this cool stuff, and I'm just missing out. Like, apparently, if you went through the Azure labs, you got those backpacks.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about that.
35 minutes a time, you got a free backpack.
I wonder why everyone's
like sitting through a timeshare.
I'm just waiting for 4 o'clock and then walk over there and go, I'll take a bag so you guys don't have to, like, ship it back to Redmond.
No, they're out. They're all
out.
Yeah.
They're all of them.
They completely ran out.
I actually
out.
Went over there at one point, and there was a long line of people waiting for the lab, but I couldn't figure out why are these people waiting in line for this to, like, you know, poke at this stuff.
Yeah, O'Reilly was Twittering. O'Reilly, the past for 3 days, they would Twitter and go, we have this book and this book and this book, whoever comes by for free.
What the heck?
Do not get in front of people in free crap. That is what I've learned. You will be hurt.
I mean, I saw John Galloway walking around with this high-tech looking accelerometer board, and I said, "What is that? Where'd you get that?" He goes, "Oh, it's over there at the Windows 7 booth." And I'm
yeah.
like,
oh. "Windows 7 sensors." They have. It's kind of odd. Like, I mean, it's cool stuff, but it's interesting booths. It's like Windows 7, and they have a booth for a very specific feature, you know. But this one was a Windows 7 sensors, and it's like built in to Windows 7, and it's got, you know, accelerometer kind of thing, and they've also got like a location based. Listening to their sales pitch a little bit, but they had like a location based sensor system built into Windows 7 that would switch between GPS and Wi-Fi location and all that. So kind of cool stuff. But this thing they were giving away is like a dev kit with this board, and the only, you know, it has to be built against Windows 7. So I mean,
of
that's
course.
How you develop.
Well, I have a related topic on that. So one of the my frustrations with Vista is like there's a lot of really cool features in Vista that are of questionable utility. Like Vista, I don't know if people know this, has like sort of best of breed like voice recognition support. Have you ever been through the tutorial?
I have, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's
You're
really
like,
good.
Wow, this is really good, and nobody uses it, right? Do you know anybody that uses that?
No, you turn
it off. I worry that when I hear accelerometer, it's like another feature that's going to be totally awesome and like irrelevant. I just worry about that.
And it's going to be require some always running service that sucks up memory and
drains your battery.
It's just frustrating. I want to make
other
sure
hand,
that
I mean, Macs all have those, right? And the iPhone, and that's part of what, you know, that's like the Mac has the accelerometer and they can disable the hard drive, you know, if it, you know, like for the drive safety.
Right.
So I think that it is something where it is maybe like it sounds like kind of a gizmo feature, but on the other hand, if people do things with it that.
Well, I think it's about the killer app, right? It's like, okay, speech recognition, but, you know, that's kind of a narrow niche. But, yeah, as long as they have a killer app to go with it that people can point to and say, oh, that's awesome, versus, okay, here's a feature. Okay, it's a feature. Great. But, yeah, anyway.
Well, think back to PTC 2005, right? That's when we really first saw, like Vista and what was coming. So, I mean, we're rinsing and repeating now, right? So do you remember the little I can't remember the actual name of it, and I should, but there's like a little window that they had on the notebooks, like a little
on the top cover
sideshow, right?
Sideshow, great,
right?
Perfect example.
Perfect example, yeah, right example. There, right?
Yeah, I mean,
how many of those have you really seen that's out there?
Exactly. Yeah, and I get very frustrated with that because I feel like that is resource development time that we spend on something that actually people would say, I'm going to buy Windows because it has X. Nobody buys Windows because of that feature. I'm sorry. It just doesn't happen.
So, Jeff, maybe you could take this speech recognition and he could turn it into the Rock Band auto singer.
Oh, what? Now I'll buy it. You're singing my song now. Yeah.
Speech recognition was a funny one because that's been like Bill Gates' pet peeve for the last 15 years. Every time he gave a talk where he was talking about things that computers will be able to do someday, he's talked about speech recognition. And I swear that's the one reason why that is so, you know, so such a big part of Vista. And yet, right, I've never seen anybody use it.
I mean, my big Windows Vista feature is I can hit the Windows key and I can start typing immediately. That built-in search thing that's a reason to use Vista for me. And it works in 2008. You know, like if you're devving and stuff, you can just type and get email and files and all
it
that.
Pains me to go back to XP and like have to navigate the start menu and find the program that I'm trying to run.
I'm all about the Flip 3D. I just hit Window Tab for hours, and I go, whoa.
Yeah, and it only works on one monitor, which is awesome.
Well, it's
right,
great. Like the thing you're bringing up of, like, do people really care about the features? And I think that, you know, we're talking about what do you see at PDC? Do you see announcements of things that may come in the future, or do you actually get some code to play with? And I do think that, you know, actually getting the people that are shipping a CTP or getting something out there are more likely to get to actually ship a useful feature, I would hope. You know,
well, and they're going to get immediate feedback. So that's an interesting thing where you give these people let them be geeks, and then you'll find out what kind of floats to the top and what they like and don't like.
One of the frustrating things around the Windows 7 stuff is that, you know, hey, they're showing all these really cool Windows 7 features, and then at the end of the end of the session, they say, "Oh, but the version we just gave you doesn't have any of these features." Like. Oh, great.
No, but I will say the thing that maybe this is the example, Jeff, is that Windows 7, the guy pulled up a little small notebook and had 1 gig of memory. It had a processor on it, remember? And it was fast and it was performant, right? Now, that's a win.
Yeah,
that is a win.
That was the best feature I saw out of Windows 7.
Yeah, I mean,
7.
Really, that was, you know, getting back to performance was a really good feature. And I just want to say that I love drag and drop. Just want to work that in.
Yeah. Well, hopefully with Steven Sanofsky in charge, he did the Office 2007 stuff, which I'm a big fan of. And hopefully with him in charge, they'll have more of a focus on features that are actually visible to users, that mainstream users will actually care about, and just bring some of the sexy back. You know, I feel like that's the problem with Vista. It just wasn't sexy enough.
How'd you guys like the taskbar?
The taskbar was cool. I mean, and there's shareware apps you can install to do that, but it's just nice to have a package, right? And everything's just there and it works. I think, like, what I'm seeing and what I was kind of hoping for is that this is really kind of like a stabilization release of Vista, right? Like, there's all this stuff they wanted to do in Vista, and then, you know, things all kind of fell apart, and then they had to scoop it all together and ship an operating system, and it's like didn't deliver on the promise, but all the little parts are in there, you know, like they built all this cool stuff and they just needed to, you know,
wrap it up nicely.
They're also building Windows 7 differently in terms of their methodology and how they're working. I can't remember the blog article that I found who wrote it, but it was a whole entire outline of what the difference was between Vista and Windows 7. And
it was Larry Osterman. He was a guest blogger on the Engineering Windows 7 blog.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, what about Visual Studio? I didn't get to see the second keynote, but I heard there's some cool things in Visual Studio 2010.
It's going to be WPF. That's the big thing, is the whole, everything is WPF.
Okay, but what does that mean to me as a developer?
So they were also
the windows are going to scale.
You're going to have more eye candy. So.
Okay, well,
so
that's good. Eye candy's WPF. Good. I'm pro eye candy.
And it also had the MEF built in so you can extend it easier without having to, you know, venture into eye unknown land and com land.
You get Wix.
Eye unknown.
And the thing that I've heard regarding Visual Studio 2010 is that it's going to be tighter and smaller, so it won't have as big a footprint in memory.
I have a hard time believing that, but I'll take your word for it.
Maybe
if they rip out all that COM stuff.
So it's not going to take a gig of RAM?
Yeah, hopefully. I'm still waiting for like Emacs.net or VI.net.
You're still riding that wagon, huh?
I just want a text editor with IntelliSense.
But they have plugins for that.
No.
Have you tried them?
But I don't want all the Team Explorer stuff. I don't want the debug. And
third-party plugins that do that. Have you looked at those?
Yeah, they have some that
like
just,
Emacs and VI?
Yeah, they give you the key bindings, but I don't care about that. I don't even care about if it's Emacs or VI or those specific command sets. I just want a text editor with IntelliSense that understands project and solution files, mm-hmm. which is something I think needs to go away. But
right
now,
it sounds like you need to start a company, my friend. That's what you need to do.
Well,
so, I mean,
I think so.
You can take the Visual Studio extensibility stuff and actually just make a shell and compile that, and it's just a shell with nothing in it, and you've got the editor and all the basic features. I mean, you could do that, but if you did that, how would you use drag and drop then? I mean, come on.
Well, it's all about dragging and dropping.
As a lightweight IDE, I was really impressed with MonoDevelop. I mean, I played with it before, and it was always kind of like, hey, you know, valiant effort, guys. You know, it's hard to build an IDE, but it's not really usable, you know. And I actually, like, got a demo from the guy that's built a lot of the features, and I was like, wow. You know, I mean, it works like a very lightweight Visual Studio. I'm not going to drop Visual Studio for it, but I was impressed by what they've done with that, if you want a lightweight IDE. And I think, you know, going back to like the lighter weight Visual Studio and WPF, like I don't think those are mutually exclusive. Right now, if anyone that's done any extensibility on Visual Studio, it's just it's inner dev with like 90 layers on top of it. It's just a rat's nest, you know? And so I think that...
Well, did you get the impression that they're going to reboot the franchise? Like they're going to really go to like a whole new code base? Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, if you're redoing the IDE, you know, the visual interface, I think there's a lot of changes there that are. And then they were showing, you know, like with MEF and this interface, you know, the WPF based interface. Then they said, here we're going to add a new visualization for this comment, you know, and it's like. So I think that does show a lot of changes in the
right. Well, no, that's good because, I mean, it's the same with any group body of code. Eventually, it accumulates more and more features, more and more crust, and eventually just kind of falls over, right? So you kind of want them to reboot it, you know, kind of like Firefox did, right? And just say, okay, we're going to start from scratch, and it's going to be super painful, but at the end of it, we're going to have something awesome.
Yeah, so John Lamb said, I heard him last night saying he wrote an extensibility, or he wrote an extension in Ruby for Visual Studio 2010.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah,
I was actually only under the impression that the text editor had been completely rewritten. Are you saying that the entire thing has been rewritten?
Well, let's take an example. Workflow Foundation, right? Workflow 4.0 is actually they said in the stuff that they threw it away, and they started over, and all of the designer and everything is WPF.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
So that's a complete. Starting over, but learning what we did and moving forward. But there is a backwards compatibility story. So you can still use Workflow 4.0. You just have an interop thing, and then it calls into the old, you know, like the 3.0 and 3.5.
But so. I was not under the impression that the menuing system, the project tree, all that stuff had been, you know, rewritten from scratch. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think it has. So one of the things that I've been kind of pushing for, and I've heard other people pushing for inside and outside of Microsoft, is either giving away Visual Studio, at least professional, on the DVDs. So Apple, when you buy a Mac, you get the OS X on the DVD, and you get Xcode and all the development tools on the DVD, so you install it. And Microsoft has a pretty good solution out there now with the free Express versions, but we're talking about, you know, maybe they could open source Visual Studio Professional under the MSPL and still have the enterprise, you know, editions for people with more dollars than cents. But, you know, you could at least distribute the Visual Studio Professional and extend it and, fork it or whatever you want to do and strip it down or add to it as much as you want.
Who the hell would want to work with that source?
They'd have to clean it up some.
Are you a communist?
Well, they have Visual Studio Express.
He's just a socialist.
Senator McCarthy.
He's a socialist.
How does this compare to Visual Studio Express?
Visual Studio Express is not open source.
So is Xcode open source?
No.
I think you're talking about the benefit of having a development environment that's ships with the DVD, and they could do that with Express.
I think so. They do that with Express, but then you get, the gimped down version of several things.
It's not really gimped.
It's really pretty.
Unless you're super hardcore.
The things that run in Express now are they better than they were
6 months ago?
I don't know about 6 months ago.
you just want every plugin to work, which I think is probably a little bit of an unreasonable expectation.
I want some plugins to work without the authors getting sued, which would be nice.
But they have to draw the line. I mean, this is the problem with licensing software. They have to draw a line in the sand. It's a completely arbitrary, stupid line, but they have to do it because the game says you have to do it, right? And the game is, paying money for software.
So
the open sourcing isn't as important to me as much as getting the big IDE on there. See, I mean, with Professional, you get stuff like, I think, do you get MS Test in Professional? No, it's...
You do now, in
2008, yeah. So getting the testing tools in there, because those aren't even the Express versions that I know of.
No.
You also can't mix project types within a solution with the Express one, so you can't have a web project and then a C# library on the back end.
But I think John's point is a really good one, is like they already have a good solution with Express. They should just freaking bundle it, which I think meets some of your needs. Not all of them, but I think that's an important step, baby steps, right? And it's crazy that they don't do that. I agree with that.
Here's what I don't like about the Express story is you download web, and then you download a WinForm, and then you download this, and it could all just be one download and just flip the little turn on and recompile and just,
let
them choose what they want to install.
More lines in the sand, right? More of the, licensing problems that you have when you license software.
But they're all free. Like, all the Visual Studio Express ones are all free, but you have to get them all separately. And I don't know if that's licensing or just how they distribute the software.
I
think some of that goes back to, like what you're saying, Scott, is I want a version that does all this stuff or it's nothing to me. And I think that, Visual Studio Express is a lot better than nothing. I just love to see, I was talking to someone today about how we all started on computers that had BASIC right at the command prompt, right? You turn them on and you start typing in BASIC. And I think a lot of us got started in computers because it was there, it was exposed, and it's with Windows being such a developer platform, I think it only makes sense to have Express.
Well, and not for nothing, they have been starting up specific academic programs where, sign up and we'll give you a Visual Studio Professional for free. And you've always been able to buy not for resale copies or academically priced, copies at the college bookstores, which is good, but there's a big difference between going and seeking these things out and then just as part of your install or your boot up, it says, oh, and here to click here to install the developer tools, and it's not necessarily for me because I make my living at this. It's for it's like for my daughter, my nephews, my friends' kids who are whose parents don't program and they don't get exposed to this kind of stuff, but they like computers and they get in there and they say, oh, so I can just start doing this, and I'm using the same tool that my friend's cousin or whatever who's a big time developer at Microsoft is using.
Well, that's what DreamSpark does if they're young and in school. So DreamSpark, anybody that's in college or school can get the exact same tools that we are using today in the real world. They can get Visual Studio. They can get SQL Server. They can get Server 2003 right now. Maybe they'll upgrade it to 2008. But the problem is nobody really knows about it.
And that goes back to the whole thing of what's in the box, because too often when I talk to people at Microsoft and I'll say, we should have this feature, or it should do this, and they'll say, well, third parties provide that, or we have a program for that, or you can go download it here, and it's like that totally misses the point, right? I mean, on my Apple II, well, on the school's Apple II that I used. I didn't have to go and get a disk or mail away for something, or, you know, I mean, I turned it on and it was there. And I think that's something where, like, at least on the DVD, install developer tools is a great idea.
Yeah, Windows, though, seems to be heading in the other direction. Like, they're taking all this built-in stuff out and making it separate downloads. You know, mail.
Like all the live stuff, you
well,
mean?
Well, that's because they get sued by EU and the Justice Department. And so I think just by their reputation, they're just saying, okay, you know what? Windows is going to be this tight, small little kernel, and then we're going to let people add stuff to it that they want, which I don't think is a bad thing. It's just what it is.
They're just trying not to get sued.
So there's kind of this culture of focusing on Windows as a platform within Microsoft, and so they end up building this great, very robust platform, but then they don't build anything to spark imagination. They don't build cool stuff in Microsoft, and so
Jeff's got to go. So we'll see you, sir.
See you.
Well, you know, in the Linux world, there's apt-get, right? Or there's other systems where you can just write. You know, you boot up a tiny Linux, and then you say, go get me a word processor, you know, and you get a list of word processors and you click and it installs one, you know, and it's just very smooth. And I'd love to see something like that in Windows where, you know, yeah, you get your live stuff and maybe you get Visual Studio Express and all that. But it's not like get involved in this program and we'll give you a link to a URL where you can, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's two things that I've heard people talk about in with regards to Windows. From the developer and the user side. So one is kind of like an apt-get or a package management program for downloading Windows applications, and the other side is a Ruby gem-like thing for libraries. So you can say, you know, gem update, you know, this .NET library in Hibernate or, you know, MVC or whatever. And I think they're starting to move towards that with the web application installer.
Yeah, packaging. When they're doing that, yeah.
But I've been wanting this whole week to find someone and talk to them about it. I haven't been able to yet. I want to know what the package definition is. I want to know what the spec is. How can I package up my app to have it used by this Windows installer? Is that possible? Because to me, that whole thing is screaming for a community solution, a site where you can go and you can upload your .NET, you know, your web application package, and they can verify, they can security screen or whatever. You know, there can be some kind of certification process, but it'd be cool if, you know, you could package up stuff and get it in there. Like, subtext is not in there. We got Graffiti in there, and we got WordPress and a couple others.
And Witty. We could have Witty in there.
We could have Witty in there.
It's like the majority of the Witty programmers are actually in here sitting at the table on the podcast.
That's right. We're just missing Alan.
we're just missing Alan.
Yeah, I've been dying for the gem-like feature. You know, you go to work with projects like, you know, in Hibernate and StructureMap, and it's just so painful to have to go track those things down online. And the whole project system just doesn't scale. You know, you're never going to have a project wizard that says, I want a new app that uses StructureMap for the DI and uses in Hibernate for persistence. I mean, it just doesn't work. We need something that's a little bit more modular and recognizes the fact that these apps are composites. You know, they build in lots of other tools.
And then finding out that some of them have dependencies that you have to go track down, but you don't know until you look at the source code
and
read the README.
And then knowing that they've updated, there's a new version, you need to incorporate that.
So have you guys ever installed SigWin?
Yeah,
I'm sure you have, right? Okay, so it's sort of like that. It's like you open it up, you can, which has a really bad install, but you could take that and polish it and say, I want text editors. Click that; it automatically checks the dependency in it, and you just say go, and it downloads and puts it on there, right? But I want to go one step further with that. You know, like that story. Okay, so I can, you know, install. But whenever I rebuild my machine and re-image it and redo stuff, I want it to remember what I did install so I can get back what I had and just say go, and it just puts everything back the way I had it.
Right. Hanselman uses a tool called InstallPad, I want to say. I think it is. So you can give it URLs for download points for different apps, and you can build just an XML file. And I think he has this on his Cool Tools 2008 or 9 or whatever list he's on now. I think he needs to update it. And, you know, you can put all your favorite apps on there. So Firefox and, you know, Edit Plus or, you know, Notepad 2 or whatever. And then when you get to a new machine, you can just run this install pad, and it looks at your XML and says, okay, install this. Go and download all the stuff and run it.
So I would do a two-pass install then. First run PCD Crapifier to get all the vendor-installed crap off.
Exactly.
And then run install pad to get everything I want on.
Maybe
like if developers made all their applications just work as just a regular executable, like you don't need an installer, just make it, just drop a folder, then you could use Mesh maybe and just say, you know, sync all of my utils and my apps with this PC, and then boom, you got everything installed.
Have you used the, what is it, live.sysinternals.com? So it's available, like, just type in the web address and you can get them from there, or you do double backslash live.sysinternals.com and you've got a folder and you just, I want to run Regmon, double click it and it runs, you know? And it's like that kind of system is great, and that works because it doesn't need an install. It's a lightweight.
Well, that's why using programs on the Apple platform is on OS X is so easy, because everything gets bundled up into basically a directory that the OS just says, okay, this is now an application.
I wish we had that developer story. It's not that we don't. It's not that we can't. We just, nobody's done it. I mean,
they got so used to using the registry to store data and settings. And
even though .NET apps especially don't need it, you know, really, like,
not right at all.
You gotta make sure they have all the right DLL dependencies, and you can't just refer to them in the folder. You've got to put them in the GAC, or you got to put them in system.32 or someplace like that, and it's really kind of a pain. And I hope that more .NET apps and managed apps move towards the what they call the Xcopy deployment.
Yeah, I that's what I want, really. I mean, and somebody could just take it and zip it up and name it .application or .app or whatever,
or witty
or witty. And then it basically just, you know, you click it and it runs. I mean, you can just install and go. So
that, you've reminded me, though, that what the biggest feature that I want out of a version of Windows is an operating system that I don't have to rebuild every 6 to 9 months.
Operating system rot?
Yes.
As you mean? Yeah.
Just kills
Rusty,
me. I think
yeah.
My laptop that I've got here, I've had tons of problems with. I'm just accepting the fact that I'm just going to have to go home and rebuild it again.
So here's what you do. You go buy home server if you don't already have a home server, and you install all of your stuff, right? And home server takes a backup every night. So once you get to once you get all of your stuff loaded on there, you just mark it and say keep that one. And then anytime you want to go back and reset, you're 15 to 20 minutes away. You just throw the connector CD in, home server restores your machine, you're back on your way.
Well, John, how often do you rebuild? Because you're Mr. Beta Man.
You know, I've actually had really good luck. I run crazy internal alphas. I run betas. I haven't had to rebuild for, gosh, like a year. No, actually, I brought my laptop up. I redid my laptop maybe 9 months ago. So.
But tell me your machine is not getting slow.
No, actually, I've had good success with uninstalling, like ruthlessly uninstalling a lot of things. And you know, I've been impressed with the Microsoft Developer Tool installers and uninstallers generally pretty good lately. I've gotten screwed by a few like alpha installers where I had to run some cleanup tools, but I really haven't had trouble with the slow machine lately. I had a problem where things were getting really screwed up. I thought I'd have to rebuild, and I uninstalled all my developer tools, you know, all the Visual Studio and everything, and reinstalled. So that was time consuming, but it was quicker than rebuilding my machine and installing everything else.
So I keep my machine pretty clean because I use virtual or VMs. So I mean, my host OS runs mostly just Office and maybe mail and stuff like that. So
my problem with that solution, though, is then you've still got a VM that gets cluttered, right? So then, I mean, and maybe you keep a copy of it and restore it or that kind of thing, but it's at the end of the day, you're running on an operating system where software is installed. So
I know. It is Rust. It's the old Windows Rust, and I don't know. I don't use a Mac, so what?
Mac's actually will rot out, too. Just ask my mom. I mean, she can rot a machine in about a month, I've come to find out. Literally, I mean, she has not yet figured out on an Apple that whenever she downloads some program that it keeps disappearing, and I have to go back and click on this and it shows up here. She hasn't caught on that you drag the app over and drop it somewhere, right? It's not intuitive, really, to be honest. I mean, it doesn't tell you what to do unless you read the README, which she's not going to do. But
I think one thing, though, that brings up, we were just talking about, is the whole MSI installer thing. Like, I avoid programs that, if I have a choice, I'll run Xcopy apps, and I avoid apps that have big installs. And I mean, I generally don't install like Acrobat Reader. You know, I mean, I don't install. I keep with the lighter weight things, and that seems to help with the rot because these applications aren't all installing in the registry. And I think Vista does do some things where it virtualizes the folders, so an app thinks it's installing all this stuff in your program files and thinks it's doing all this stuff, but it's really putting it in the users, John, app data, whatever stuff, and or those types of programs or folders. So I think that does help with the rot a little on Vista.
Could also just do click once installs for everything.
That's true.
Whereas that actually writes to the registry and put stuff over there, and I mean, it's, yeah. I'm like, just make click once, you know, have a setting, like make everything configurable so I can say, install this. Yes, I understand that it's going to go into the user's directory, right? But just give me a hard, so I can hard code the path as to where it lives, you know, in there. And instead of all this weird, you know, crazy stuff, you know.
I've been frustrated that they don't have kind of the hybrid thing where you can, or if they do, it's not easy to do, where you say, here's my installer, and it's also updates from this click once address. I'm sure it's possible to do, but it doesn't seem simple. And talking about things we haven't heard much about, I haven't heard much about click once install since, or it's been a while since I've heard.
2008 has some new features and new stuff, but you probably won't see a whole lot for a while, I would imagine.
During Hanselman's presentation on Monday, he actually launched Baby Smash click once install from Firefox, and he pointed out that, you know, now if you install Visual Studio 2008 with, you know, .NET 3.5 SP1, it adds a Firefox extension if it's there, so that click once is actually click once and not click thrice inside of Firefox.
Well, guys, it's been fun sitting down and chatting. It's good to bring everybody's podcast together. We're going to do something with this. We don't know what.
Yeah,
so
we'll spread. We're going to spread.
We're going to chop it up and, you know, put a little over here and a little over there and a little over there, and we'll let everybody kind of cross pollinate between our podcasts. We're all good. We're all good friends, so there's no reason why we can't, you know. Really?
I know. We've had to separate you guys a few times at PDC.
That's because you called him Mini John earlier. Right. So we'll put this up somewhere, and that's it. We're out for PDC. We're going to be going home today, so that's it. Thanks guys for coming out and talking.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
So that's it. Hope you liked it, and if you're a Deep Fried Bytes listener, I hope you'll come back and join us again on Herding Code. I'd like to give a special thanks to Keith Elder, who provided all the audio equipment and did all the audio editing for this week. From what I understand, it was a pretty hellacious task. So thanks again, Keith. All right, we'll see you next week on Herding Code.